Oh, yes. This is the Hardcore Marketing Show. I'm Casey Cheshire, your host for this epic journey. Today's show is sponsored by Ringmaster on a mission to launch B2B podcasts that create relationships, generate revenue, and drive growth. Ringmasterlive.com. Bam. The adventure has begun. The safari jeep has left the home base. We're out in the wild. We're in the field, about ready to tackle some marketing myths. I can't wait to introduce my guest today. This has been one of those calls where when you get busy people, you get busy hosts. Man, we've been trying to align our schedules for so long, and it's finally happening. I feel like it, you know, it's one of those events that you've been waiting to happen, and now it's here. You don't know what to do with yourself, so you're really excited. So who is this person, Casey? Tell me, who is this guest you're going to be chatting with today? Well, he's a seasoned marketing leader, meaning he has been through it all. I can't wait to learn from him, a marketing leader and thought leader, but he's all about the revenue, right? Revenue marketing, but he blends this. It's a very cool approach where he's intentionally blending strategy and analytics. That's the magic right there. VP of Growth Marketing at Commvault, Avi Bhatnagar. Welcome, sir.
Thanks, Casey. Excited to be here today.
Yeah, we're doing this, man. We're doing this. So I'm going to pass you this thing. It's heavy, but I can tell you work out. 1 second. Here it is. Okay.
I got it.
Here you go. Thor's hammer. Grab that thing.
Got it. Got it in my hand and have it secure it? Here. Oh,
there you go. Okay. Take Thor's hammer. Smash for me some kind of marketing myth, bogus strategy, misconception. Set the record straight once and for all.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to do that. And today I want to have the myths around product-led growth, and I actually have five PLG myths that I want to debunk, starting with PLG is not necessarily meant for the enterprise. Well, companies like Atlassian, Twilio, AWS, Snowflake all have proven that they have cross-functional teams that work in tandem and are able to convert enterprise deals through the adoption of PLG principles. Number two, PLG is—
Whoa, hold on a second. Partner-led growth, not meant for the enterprise. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? Why do people think that?
I think it's—
Clearly you smashed it.
Yeah, I think it's really comes from the motion that PLG is a self-service motion for the SMB in the mid-market. Where you're thinking about, you know, velocity and fast transactions. And that's definitely true. But then there's also the opportunity for the larger enterprises to be able to think about having the ability to work in tandem and having inclusivity between cross-functional teams to think about having the PLG motion start with an individual, but then be able to expand into additional folks within an active buying committee.
Right. Cool. Now, and I don't know if I just said it as partner-led, but we're talking product-led growth, right?
Product-led growth, exactly.
All right. I got to make sure I got the P figured out here. We're also not talking like Play-Doh-led growth. This is all about the product. Product first. Okay. Smash. It is for the enterprise. It isn't just for SMB. What else we got?
The second, PLG is the responsibility of just the product team, right? You think P for product and it's just for product teams, but in reality, in order for PLG to be successful, it requires full alignment across an executive motion, as well as functional teams across sales, marketing, customer success, pricing, and even operations.
Everybody can't just be in a silo. Have you seen that? Have you seen organizations where, you know, I don't know if this is the response. First, have you seen it? And then two, who was responsible for making it so siloed? Was product trying to just own the whole thing, or were people just like, well, that's a product thing? What have you seen?
I think it's one of those common things where companies, enterprise companies especially, start understanding about the product-led growth motion. And obviously there's a lot of hype and, you know, they want to be able to understand how to be able to think product-led growth. And therefore, they start working in an incubator environment in silos where one functional team, like a product or an engineering team, may be kind of the pioneers of starting the motion without necessarily thinking about an entire PLG motion across other functions that would need to be involved early and often.
Yeah, it's that it's the focus on the now, not realizing that you need to get everyone involved for this thing to have legs, for it to last beyond one cycle. You got to get everyone involved. Curious, have you seen who gives the most resistance to a PLG motion? Are there any particular departments that have the hardest time understanding that really they're involved too? It's not just a product thing.
I would say it's kind of, you know, one of those things that it just requires to be more of a company-wide and a top-down plan, right? When companies have the ability to think of a company-wide motion and understanding the starting points and, you know, setting up a vision, I think that those are kind of critical components when you want to be able to influence culture, when you want to be able to define success criteria and build allies across the organizations. That can help reduce some of that friction from the get-go to ensure that, you know, everyone's on the same page, everyone understands the value of PLG, and everyone can buy into that motion as a top-down plan.
And top-down, I mean, is it almost table stakes then that the CEO has to lead this as an effort for the whole organization, or who leads this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It starts, okay, starts from the, you know, the executive teams and having them understand the value that the PLG program and motion can bring to their company. And it's more than just, you know, around product. It's more about revenue and how to be able to have monetize your product in a way that could lead to, you know, more and more, you know, cross-sell, upsell, land and expand.
Dude, love this. Avi, you're on a roll. We got 5 PLG myths. Smash 2. Take that hammer. Smash number 3.
So we talked about the responsibility of the product. So PLG companies don't need a sales team. Absolutely, absolutely required. 96% of PLG companies have a sales team, according to OpenView Partners report. PLG and sales are complementary and additive as it increases sales team's bandwidth to pursue more and more large deals and accelerate deal cycles.
How does it do that? That's really interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
So if you think about a PLG motion, right? So say you have a free trial or a freemium product of some kind. Typically, SaaS companies have a trial motion, a 30-day trial. And then, you know, software companies may have some kind of a freemium model, right? But nonetheless, you have someone that comes in from your trial, typically an admin or a user of the product, and they see, you know, they start going into the product, they activate their trial, and they start looking at the features and functionalities. And then they want to invite, you know, their boss or other folks within their organization, where they have the ability to show other folks within their business unit or within their teams what they're working on within the trial. Now, when that happens, that basically means you have, you know, 2 or more people that are now in your trial, which is basically an account. And that's where, you know, having the right triggers to be able to ensure that sales now knows that there's, you know, 2 or more people from this particular company that are in the product and that are looking at the features and functionalities of the trial. So that basically is an opportunity to have, you know, sales teams to be prepared to have the right conversations with those accounts.
Okay. Sick. Yeah, right. It's when you say it like that, then I can see sales being like, oh, okay, cool. I could use a little more bandwidth, you know? I'd love to be more effective with my time.
Yeah.
Across the team.
Absolutely, because it's a, you know, it's an opportunity for them to think about an account-based motion at that point, right?
So
I think that's where the need for PLG companies to have the right alignment with sales teams, especially at the enterprise level, is critical and a baseline.
So it's almost like a flow from a PLG to an ABM. Not to completely throw acronyms out there, but
exactly.
I see the connection. Yeah,
exactly. I've had several conversations with folks about finding the intersection between PLG and ABM. And it starts with, you know, if companies have the right capabilities within their product around instrumentation, where they can have multiple users go into a trial instance, then those are definitely leading indicators that you have an account that's highly active in your product and trying your product out now. And so obviously you'd want to be able to think about having that into kind of an ABM motion as well.
Which comes first, chicken or the egg, PLG or ABM?
It's one of those things that could, you know, have a dual kind of role, right? It's you can have, and you know, the programmatic ABM motions in place where your marketing teams are constantly activating using, you know, air cover motions, while in tandem, if you have the ability to have the bottom up motion also driven through marketing, you can basically be able to find the intersection. Now, which comes first in the chicken and the egg? I would say it's kind of one of those things that just depends on how your product is getting discovered and how you're doing your kind of outbound motions to drive that demand gen.
That makes sense. In the end, you do need a product.
Exactly.
So yeah, I hear you on the egg, which one the egg is. Okay, sick. So completely smashed. You do need a sales team. Everyone, 96% do, and the other 4%, we don't know what they're up to, but it's probably not good.
Yeah, for sure.
What is number four, sir?
So the fourth one, we talked about sales, and of course, PLG products need a sales team, need a product team, but then they also need a marketing team, right? Majority of PLG companies have growth and corporate marketing teams that drive that customer acquisition and activation component. So that's going to be critical component, is that having the marketing arm to support the PLG motion.
It's funny that we have to have that as a myth, right? That some people would think that maybe you didn't need to have that. Just like, well, I guess most people understand you need the sales. So I don't know if there's stats on that, but it must be a lot lower of the companies doing PLG, maybe not successful, they don't have a marketing arm. Like, what? Where does that come from? What are they doing?
I think you're right. You're absolutely right. I don't have the stats in terms of what that looks like, but it's almost a...
We'll just make it up, you know.
It's almost a must-have to have marketing
right.
involved in this part, especially because if you want to drive the right level of, you know, top of funnel, sign-ups to your product, you want to be able to drive the right level of education around awareness and consideration components that marketing typically does, you do have to have the right alignment. And I think that it's more of a myth that maybe sometimes marketing teams may be doing those efforts, but then, you know, engineering and product teams may be doing other efforts that just aren't fully kind of, synergized. And therefore, it's critical for all of these teams to work kind of together in tandem to make sure that it's more of a top-down motion for PLG success.
Got it. Anything in particular, like I know you mentioned, you know, the growth marketing, the corporate marketing. What would you say is the key factor needed from the marketing side mm-hmm. in order to properly deploy a PLG motion?
I think it's really thinking about, you know, your... not only thinking about top of funnel, driving that demand, but having the ability to do it in a very, targeted way, right? You just don't want to have like a large volume of signups and think marketing's done their job. No, you really want to be able to think about driving that top of funnel signups from your ideal customer profiles, from your actual the people that fit your profile that you want them to understand the value, but not only sign up, but then also activate the product. So marketing is, going to be, their North Star is going to be not only sign ups, but they'd also want to think about what's the conversion rate from a sign up to an activation. And, you know, the activation is a metric around the PQL, which is the product qualified lead, right? And that's, you know, each company has their own way of measuring a PQL, right? But at the end of the day, you want to be able to think about expanding the top of funnel and then increasing in-product activation rates and using data-driven insights from the product to really be able to see how your funnel looks like for the self-service motion. And marketing plays a critical part for that.
You know, it's interesting that it's not enough just to get the lead in, mm-hmm. get the demo, get the free trial sign up. You got to use the thing. Mm-hmm. And activation, implementation, like that's such a critical component. And I think it goes overlooked a lot. And then people often wonder, whose bucket does it fall into? Marketing is perfectly placed to be able to continue to nurture that relationship. Real quick though, talk on PQL, because I haven't heard that term before. Is that someone who's actively using the trial? Is that what that stands for?
Yeah, exactly. So the PQL, product qualified lead, is the metric that's in, widely spread across companies that are doing any kind of PLG motions. We know about the MQL, the marketing qualified lead, the SQL, sales qualified lead, but the PQL, in some ways, companies that have PLG motions are looking at their own kind of self-service funnel, meaning, from the top of the funnel are the signups, in the middle of the funnel are your PQLs, the product qualified leads. And then of course, bottom of the funnel is more the opportunity stages. And when thinking about the PQL, you have someone that goes through the process of signing up for a trial on a website, and then they receive some kind of an email notification to basically activate their trial. And once they go through that motion of activations, what are they doing in product? Are they actually logging into the product and looking at the features, whether they may be, the functionalities that that your trial has to offer? Are they navigating around? Are they looking at the different consoles? And those are the different types of activities that you'd want to be able to measure. The more sophisticated you get with the PQL, the more scoring that you can do, right? Some companies may have just like the ability to, when someone activates, that's what they measure as a PQL. But other companies that are more sophisticated and more mature in their analytics and their product analytics, they can look at all the different touches that are happening within product. So when someone activates, they get a certain score. When they navigate around to different portions of the console, they can potentially have different kind of scorings to be able to acquire and accrue more points as part of their PQL.
Interesting. Would that be so? It's not just a threshold. Is it kind of like almost like a lead score where that number increases, or do you see it typically used like a yes or no flag, or how do you tend to see that?
I think it could completely vary in terms of how you have your configurations and setup, but you're absolutely spot on. You can have it as a lead scoring mechanism. You can have it into different kinds of tiering models where if they do certain activities, then there's, you can create different tiers within those activities completed successfully or not. So those depends completely on how your PQL setup.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Super cool. I love that. And I think there's been so much over obsession over the MQL that it's great to be thinking about the PQL and actively using the tool. And look, and there's some great apps out there to help with that. But just understanding, are they using those critical features, and what are those critical features that lead to a successful trial? I mean, trials are dangerous. Like, I don't think people give it enough credit that some apps just aren't made, or they're not intentionally designed with the idea that an unskilled, uneducated user can just get in there and be successful, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely where there's, different types of tools that are out there to help understand the analytics within the product, right? What's happening when someone goes into your product, your trial, or your freemium? And what are they, end users and prospects, what are they actually doing in product? And so to be able to think about the customer behaviors in product can help to understand like when to have the right conversations and engage the sales organizations accordingly.
Yeah. And I mean, what a superpower for sales to be aware of what kind of activation is going on, what kind of usage is going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like gold.
Of course. And if they have those triggers available to them upfront, and then they can basically, initiate a conversation based on what the activity that's happening in product, right? Oftentimes, when, especially in the B2B space, when you're dealing with decision makers that sit in, IT, they don't want to necessarily hear about bells and whistles. They want to hear about how the product is solving their challenges. And those are the type of conversations that they'd want to be able to, initiate so that they can actually see value and become more and more of a champion and really be the amplify source for your product within their organizations.
Love it, man. Love it. What's five? Smash this thing.
So PLG companies spend less on sales and marketing due to a lower CAC or customer acquisition cost. But in reality, PLG promises a lower CAC, but successful PLG models require high brand awareness and product placement in the market to be able to deliver that easy discoverability. So investment in marketing and sales is needed, but it can lead to the ability to have lower, you know, customer acquisition costs at the end of the day.
So let me challenge on that, because it sounds like people are thinking it's going to lower things, but you still need an investment, or you need a brand that's just on fire at the moment.
Yeah.
So there needs to be some kind of attraction.
Yeah, of course. You want to think about, like, you know, when someone, when a company has their product and they're doing kind of the traditional ways of marketing where they're showing, you know, white papers and reports and, you know, display ads and LinkedIn, et cetera. That's all great and helpful, but it's more air cover. But then when the differentiation is going to happen, when you actually show the value of your product upfront to your prospects and your end users, and that doesn't always, you know, that starts with, you know, a trial or a freemium, but it can also start with product demos, interactive experiences that can be built as part of your demand generation efforts. And when you show more of the value, plus the ability of what your features and functionalities are to differentiate yourself from your competitors, then it can lead to, you know, eventually faster growth, and of course, lower, you know, customer acquisition cost at the end of the day.
What's your take? Cause we've talked a little bit about trial, a little bit about demo. If you had your druthers, if you had your choice, do you prefer the freemium trial, the free trial, or just a really good demo?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say that, you know, depending on the complexity of your product, right? In the B2B SaaS space, we have long sales cycles, complex product offerings, and the time to, you know, convert can be, you know, months, if not sometimes even up to over 12 months or a year. And therefore, having the ability to have users visualize as much as possible and try it on their own, right? It's critical in the world that we live in today. We want to have users to have the ability to, you know, plug and play on their own, to be able to see all the bells and whistles that are available on a, you know, in a scaled down version of the product. I think those are beneficial and helpful. Of course, they'd want to be able to see it first and then to be able to try it out on their own to get full value.
Right. Okay. Fantastic. Do you have what's the one thing, let's say you're rolling out, like this is a compilation of some fantastic myths, someone rolling out PLG for the first time. Do you have what's the biggest gotcha? What's the biggest, just the one thing you want people to watch out for?
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, when thinking about that top down plan and successfully, you know, deploying a company wide PLG impact, you know, some of the common challenges to anticipate can be around how you are incubating, right? You want to be able to incubate teams and innovate quickly, right? It's PLG is all about experimentation. It's like win or learn, right? And you never think about, you know, if you have the ability to have those data-driven experiments that you can build to find those quick and early wins, that's how you build the trust across the organizations. And that's how you can build the right teams in the right way and, you know, divide them into kind of pillars around acquisition, activation, and monetization. And that's, you know, that can really help you to be structured in terms of scaling the PLG motion within the company.
Beautiful. You clearly have an expertise and experience in the particular PLG motion. What about it? what about it makes it one of those go-tos for you? You're brought in to help a company grow. Like, it's time to scale. It's time to go big or go home. What about that approach pushes the other ones out of the way, or at least makes it one of your most important ones?
Yeah, I think it's just because of one of those things that's best in class PLG programs have to think about, you know, exceptional product experiences, right? We are always, you know, companies are always talking about customer experience. Customer experience is something that has to be flawless in every single way. And having, you know, those exceptional product experiences are part of customer experiences, well-defined end-to-end customer journeys, and being able to understand how users are actually, you know, maximizing the value of product, right? When someone buys a SaaS product of any nature, they, you know, one of the metrics that everyone wants to look at is the time to value. How fast are they actually seeing value with your product once they actually purchase? And that's, you know, trial can definitely help to accelerate time to value.
Beautiful. Do you have any, like, what is not the play, right?
Mm-hmm.
What, do you see anyone, are there any motions in particular that are not the right approach for a company that's in growth mode?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously, if, you know, sometimes companies may have standalone tactics for their PLG motions. I think, and then they think that they're now doing, you know, a PLG program. I think, you know, really thinking about having those critical components defined early and often are going to help, you know, be able to build more of a scalable program. I think, you know, having the ability to understand, you know, organizing the teams we talked about, but having an audit and setup of the infrastructure of the tool and the tech stack, right? Because, you know, you may have a trial, but do you have the right level of data analytics? Do you have an experimentation framework set up? Do you have like, capabilities on, automated bill plays or, you know, customer data management or data warehousing? Those are all kind of critical components as well as you scale up the program and want to think about long-term success.
Man, where do you like to go to get information? Have there been any books you've been reading lately that you're really loving, even if they're fiction, or podcasts or any other sources that have been kind of intriguing you?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, buzz around this topic now. Everywhere you are on LinkedIn, you see so much. Everyone's talking about it. I think Wes Bush has he's the founder of productled.com. Definitely a really great source. There's another person by the name of Hila Xu. She's an author and advisor for Reforge, and she's always has great, you know, posts and information that's available for last few years for sure, at least ever since I've been following her. There's also a gentleman, Sangram Vajjar, who's the CEO of Go-to-Market Partners. He's been talking a lot about PLG motions as well. So, you know, some great sources that are out there, and definitely encourage users to be able to get the right level of education on PLG.
That's cool. Yeah, shout out to Sangram. He's been on the show a couple of times, you know, schooling us on ABM, and I know now he's really on fire with the PLG motion. So yeah, cool. You know, and now you're in that list. So if anyone else, you know, if they could ask the question, you know, there's three names plus your name, I think we add to the list on this one.
Can't wait.
Killer. Well, my next question for you is like, who are you? How do you know all these things? Can you take me back in time? Look, little obby days, did you know you're going to be a marketing leader, thought leader, teaching people about PLG on a podcast one day?
Never thought I'd be doing this, but definitely exciting to even think about as we sit here and discuss this topic.
Yeah.
So a little bit about me, my background, you know, been in the B2B marketing space for 20 plus years. Actually started my studies were in engineering. So I transitioned into marketing from the inception of my career. I always thought it was cool to be able to work in, you know, different types of marketing functions. So the first half of my career, really came at the large conglomerates like the Ciscos and Junipers of the world in various capacities of marketing. primarily around...
God, but let me interrupt real quick. So how do you go from engineering nerd to marketing nerd? You know what I'm saying? Like, cause I actually did the same kind of thing. I was computer science and went into marketing. So tell me about the engineer. Was there a moment in time or was it like an evolution?
I think it just kind of happened organically for me, working, you know, in undergrad and grad programs at like different companies in kind of marketing functions and getting that exposure. Just felt that there's, you know, where you have the ability to have, you know, the right aptitude, but then use business skills and savviness to be able to excel in marketing. That was what really excited me from the inception.
That's cool. No looking back, huh? The product focus allows you to still wear some of those hats, right? You're able to bring that engineering expertise and at least the thought discipline into your marketing.
Yes, absolutely. I think kind of having that, you know, strategic practitioner mindset where you roll up your sleeves and be more of a builder. I think that really helps, you know, especially in PLG motions. Companies, you know, marketing teams that are involved in PLG, you know, oftentimes are focused just on the features and functionalities, but highly encouraged to be able to actually try the product for yourself, to be able to create your own trial, to create your own environments. And I think that the more hands-on you become, the more passion you build around the product PLG motion.
Amazing. So you're at Commvault now. Mm-hmm. It's all about the growth. Let's grow. Let's get people. Tell me what you're up to there. What are you excited about? You know, what made you choose Commvault as that company you wanted to, you know, carry the flag for?
Absolutely. Yes. And thinking about the motion of PLG is a big part of our routes to market. You know, we have inbound motions, which are more traditional demand gen. We have outbound motions through more programmatic ABM. And then we have the self-service motions for using the PLG motions. And really that's the exciting component in terms of how to be able to align each of these routes to market and motions to in a way that can really impact the bottom line and help grow the business, right? We want marketing to be have a seat at the revenue table. We want marketing to be able to have an impact towards the pipeline and closed won business that companies are bringing, and have, you know, move away from the motion of marketing being a cost center. And so I think that can help build tremendous value and confidence across your organization.
Yeah, 100%. 100%, man. Well, my next question for you is a bit of a hypothetical question, but as a fellow tech head and an engineer, I'm sure you'll be just fine with this because you see, I may or may not have a time machine here in New Hampshire, right? It's behind the house in the backyard covered in a tarp. So let's say next time you're back out this way doing an event in Boston, you know, big world tour, mm-hmm. You come on up, we get some beer, we get to play with the time machine. But it's a particular kind of time machine where you go back in time and you get to meet yourself a few days after that undergrad degree. And you get a chance to chat with yourself. You can tell yourself anything you want. What would you tell yourself?
That's love the question. And what I would tell myself if I could go back in time in terms of how to be able to really take initiative and own it, right? In a way that like make meaningful decisions where each experience that you build helps you kind of cultivate who you are, both personally and professionally. I think that being able to become more and more well-rounded and having a mindset of just being, want to be able to take on more, being able to have that tenacity. I think that that's something that, you know, I built in my career as it progressed, something that if I started even earlier, who knows what would have happened?
Yeah, who knows, right? But, you know, I obviously the timing works great. But I love that question, man, because the advice we give ourselves is probably the advice we can continue to give ourselves. You know, it continues to be something we can remind ourselves. So that tenacity, mm-hmm. that initiative, I love that. That's so good. Sig, man. So man, we've talked about all this PLG thing, but I gotta know, how was that trip? How was that vacation? Was it Colombia?
Yeah.
What was it?
Oh yeah. Wow. That was months ago. It was Colombia and Europe.
It was months ago.
I'm glad you remember.
First time we chatted, you're like, I'm about to go on this trip. I'm like, I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah.
And then we had to reschedule a couple of times.
Yeah.
So last year when you went to Colombia, how was it?
Yeah. It was awesome. Highly recommended. We're in several different cities, Cartagena, Medellin, and Bogota, all three different, cities within Colombia. And wow, it's a really progressive country in terms of where they are and awesome foods. Love the culture. Very diversified and progressive in nature. So definitely highly recommended for anyone that's looking to venture out to South America.
You know, I love that we're chatting about this because I think certainly for me, you watch, what is it? Narcos or something on Netflix, and that's your picture of a whole country.
Yeah.
Is like that experience. But it sounds like that's not the case at all. We have a beautiful place with some amazing food.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a favorite memory or favorite place you went to?
I'd say definitely my experience in Medellin was awesome. There was a town called Poblado, which is where I was staying. It felt like you were in the U.S., but you were just basically around just really nice communities, great restaurants, amazing coffee. For those that are coffee connoisseurs, I think that's a great town to remember. Great fond memories in Poblado.
On the list. I've just added it to the list.
Awesome.
So good. Well, hey, I don't know if you look, but that we've time warped just now. I don't know if we use the time machine, but this has been awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on here. I'm so glad we were able to reschedule things and get this happening. This is so good. I mean, PLG, I feel so much more comfortable and confident that I know the wrong ways to go and at the same time, the right ways to go with that and how to avoid the pitfalls. So I really appreciate you.
Thanks, Casey. I really appreciated the conversation today too.
Absolutely, man. Where can people connect with you if they want to reach out? They want to connect, some social platforms, websites, Convo, all that.
Yeah.
Where do they go?
I'm a big, B2B guy. So you can find me on LinkedIn. That's my primary, Avi Bhatnagar. You can do a search for me and hopefully find me there. I'm also on Twitter, but LinkedIn is where you'd find me most.
I love it. Well, those listening, if you learned something, and I freaking know you did because I've got two pages of notes over here, front and back, share this episode with one person. 9 people, 3,000 people. The number doesn't really matter, but get good information to other people's hands. That's thought leadership. Be a thought leader. With that, Avi, thank you so much, sir. You are the man.
Thanks, Casey. Nice chatting with you.
All right, everyone. This has been another crazy cool episode of the Hardcore Marketing Show. We will see you all next time.